Thanks to Datadog for sponsoring today's episode of Does Not Compute. Datadog provides a unified view of all the services, systems, and apps in your tech stack. They integrate with over 200 services like Postgres, AWS, Slack, and Kubernetes out of the box. If you have something else to monitor, they make it easy to write custom integrations. Just having metrics isn't enough. You need to be able to visualize and act on them. Thankfully, Datadog makes that easy too. With tools like end-to-end request tracking, alert forecasting, and anomaly detection, you'll be able to make sense of your whole stack. Datadog also provides great pre-built and fully customizable dashboards, making it easy to stay up to date at a glance. Datadog helps thousands of companies collect all their metrics, then visualize and alert based on them. Learn more about how they can help you at datadog.com/doesnotcompute. When you sign up for a free trial and create your first dashboard, they'll send you a free Datadog t-shirt. Visit datadog.com/doesnotcompute today to learn more and sign up. One, two, three.
That's much better. I don't know if the delay was coming from your side or my side. Now that
It only took one headphone change, one computer reboot, two Discord calls,
yeah,
a couple audio hijack sessions, and we're finally recording.
Yeah. For now.
Man.
We'll see what else happens.
What a process.
Yeah.
Feels like everything in my life lately has been a bit of a process.
Yeah, you're saying before I had to restart my computer because I clicked on the Wi-Fi icon.
How dare you?
That you've been having some hashtag RV life situations.
Yeah, but not beautiful sunsets for sure. It's been super cold here. It finally became winter as of like a week ago, and we're leaving in a week, so of course, great timing. But we've been having to deal with that. Of course, it's not super well insulated yet because we haven't prepped it for winter because we were planning to leave before winter originally.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going through a fair bit of propane, and we ran out two nights ago on Friday night. And we're like, okay, that's fine. We just go tomorrow when there's a break in the snow, and we'll just make it quick. And so we do that. We get down the long, twisty driveway, long, steep, twisty driveway, just fine. Get on the road, get the propane. Everything's going great. Road is clear on the way back. It took us maybe, I don't know, 20 minutes total. So really fast run. And we turn the corner just before where we're staying, and whole road's white. Driveway's all covered. We try to get up it. We can't. We slide back down. So it's like, okay. We went, and then we ended up just meeting with some friends and getting dinner. And while we were trying to figure out what to do back down in town. And ended up hanging out with them. Stayed at their place or where they were staying. Just kind of parked the van outside of it. I didn't get to bed until 3 because I was working on some Nuxt stuff, which we were going to have to talk about.
Yes.
And then woke up at 7:30 this morning to one of our dogs getting all sick all over the bed, which meant both of our super bulky sleeping bags, our sheet, some of our like pillow materials that make up the bed. So from like 7:30 a.m. for like 4 hours, we were at this laundromat. Ended up doing like 5 loads of laundry. Had to wash one of the bags twice. But then we finally got back here, got stuck going back up the driveway, and it took an hour to dig that out. I'm very tired, Sean. I'm very tired. All of that to say, I'm very tired.
You got to play a show tonight, huh?
It's been quite a 24 hours. I have to play a show.
You got to play a show to get the full experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's the only thing that would make it better. Putting on an event. Yeah.
You got to play a show to like 12 people. And then you got to haggle with the event promoter to get your money.
Oh, man. That would really round it out.
Yeah. That sounds like a whole thing.
It is a whole thing. But I mean, honestly, I just... It only makes me love it more because it's just interesting experiences at the end of the day.
Yeah, every day is different. I think one of my least favorite things to do is to wake up to an animal ralphing or urinating
not ideal.
On you. It happened to me several times, actually, mostly from cats, but I would be sleeping on the floor in a sleeping bag and wake up to a cat peeing on me in the middle of the night. That's always great. One time a cat peed in my acoustic guitar case, and
oh man,
I just left the case. There was no saving it. it was too far gone, so I just ditched it. Luckily, my guitar
life
wasn't
on the road is tough.
Yeah. It just makes me laugh a little bit. I mean, it sucks, you know, they have to deal with that stuff, but it just makes me laugh a little bit.
Yeah, it's all part of the experience. It's all, I mean, I don't know. Hopefully I'm learning something.
Yeah, yeah. You meet a certain kind of someone hanging out at laundromats.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
I think the one that takes the cake, though, is the one in Santa Cruz downtown that has, like, a coffee bar in it, inside of it. But there's, like, bullet holes, Nick was telling me, in the wall of this place because it was right down by the Taco Bell downtown in Santa Cruz.
That's the thing about Santa Cruz. Yeah, there's, like, those two blocks that are pretty sketchy. Mm-hmm. And then it's completely fine, and then you'll have like another random two blocks where it's pretty weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's very isolated.
The closer you
weirdness.
Get to the river, I think, the worse. Mm-hmm. Worse it got. Yeah, but that sounds interesting. That sounds the snow thing. It's like I've been talking about how this last week the snow's been melting, so there's no longer piles of snow taller than vehicles, like outside my house. So I think I jinxed it because I told everyone that we work with, I was like, oh yeah, the snow's finally melting. And then the next day, boom, I wake up, everything's white again. It's like, what happened?
Yeah, that's kind of how it's been here, but it's not sticking for any more than a couple of days. The roads are clear, like basically the next day, every time it snows. So it's just not building up a base. The local, ski resort opened for like half a week, a few weeks ago, and they had to close, and now they're finally able to open again, hopefully a little bit more for real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm March. Jeez,
pretty over it. Pretty over the snow. Pretty over the mud. It's just going to be muddy for a month or two now, which I don't like to wear boots. I don't like how they're not comfortable to me. So if I want to walk anywhere, I have to put boots on. Otherwise, I get mud up to like my shins because there's no sidewalks and things where I live. So you kind of have to walk in the dirt.
Yeah, yeah. We're in that same boat. Oh, man. All right. So, yeah. I mean, I'm ready to just dive into it. We got to talk about the Snux stuff that we're
trying. Well, there's a lot of things.
Trying. There's a bunch of things. What are we going to start with?
Oh, man. Is this going to be like a weekly DK report?
I guess. State of the, is that what the show
state
is now?
Of events. Maybe people are interested in that. I'm interested in it because I'm doing it. But
I feel like I'm learning a lot.
Yeah.
And maybe if we're learning a lot, then hopefully we can help other people learn something.
Yeah. So I had a good talk yesterday with, I can't remember his official title now. Ex-friend of the show, Rockwell, according to friend of the show, Andrew, Rockwell's ex-best friend of the show or something. I can't
Wait,
remember.
Did he get demoted or promoted?
He was demoted. I don't know.
Oh, man. That's rough.
It's just funny because every time I talk to him, he's Crichton in our Discord. He says ex-friend of the show, Rockwell. That's how he refers to him, which I think is hilarious. But I had a good talk with ex-friend of the show, Rockwell. Rockwell, you're still my friend. But so... We've talked a lot about my schemas in my context and things. And so it's interesting because we have like two major projects going on, which is the next one, like you're saying, converting, kind of like just building a new front end, a new SPA side of things.
Yeah, basically porting the existing front end away from being built into Phoenix.
Which is going to be nice because what we have now is working well until... things just get more complicated. So the features are getting more complicated and more dependent on JavaScript and more dependent on, it just gets messier when you kind of have to keep marrying the server rendered Elixir templates with, you know, bootstrapping that up, booting that up with JS and API endpoints.
Yeah, it's a really easy way to get going. Obviously, I'm still amazed at the fact that you were able to convert this whole project over from Rails over to Phoenix. Like that is kind of mind blowing to me to this day, and I'm sure will be for a while.
Yeah.
But like I think that was a really quick way, especially since it already existed in a similar kind of setup in Rails land, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least in terms of how the templates work and all that.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty similar.
So it makes sense for the position you were in, but I think I really do think this is something that is going to make both our lives way easier in the long run.
Yeah. it's gonna remove some conflations of concerns between, you know, having like API endpoints and Elixir kind of render templates, where like a page is rendered via Elixir, but then we have to do some API requests to get all the data that we need to build that page, and that's obviously not great. And from like a user's perspective, because then they have to, then there's just parts of the page that are missing until everything is booted up and the data comes in. Whereas with Nuxt and SSR, it's rendered on the server and then hydrated on the client. So the user experience is going to get much better, which that's really what makes it important for me, is kind of like the timing and the speed things. I think that like in the conversion to Nuxt, we'll be able to clean up a lot of stuff, kind of like a lot of cruft that's been laying around.
Oh man, I'm way ahead of you on that front.
Yeah.
I've been cleaning and cleaning.
Yeah. It's going to be really cool. Plus, I mean, like we talked about going GraphQL, and so like saying that some views require, it's pretty common, you know, like the views require multiple API requests and things like that. So it makes sense along with like cleaning this part up, as soon as we're able to consume that information, it makes sense to be able to plug that in. So Nuxt, I mean, it just makes a lot of sense here. It saves so much time. And I can't remember if I mentioned this last week, but it just feels really good to have tools that I don't like have to Google for the newest thing. I'm comfortable with what we're using, and I think they're great tools. And we're obviously very productive in them now because we've been using them for a long time, and I think that's a really good feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the most important things, is just really knowing your tools and being comfortable with them. And that's definitely where I feel like I'm at with pretty much everything. Still getting comfortable with Elixir land, but so far, man, I'm still loving it.
You're about to be a lot more comfortable, actually, because of a branch that I'm hacking on the weekend. Don't tell my boss. And you don't tell her, because I'll get in trouble if she finds out. Lindsay, don't listen to this.
Don't tell mine either.
Yeah. So along with like the Nux kind of thing, there, the whole like the conversation with Rockwell and like the idea of having like not really any shared schemas. It won't make a lot of sense to people that aren't really fluent, I guess, in like Phoenix. It's not even really Phoenix, it's just like Ecto more so. But I've been giving it a lot of thought, and so like the solution that I came up with the first time, it worked really well for like 3 months, and it was like, this is great. And then a certain set of features came in that made it more difficult to keep going that route. So to kind of wrap, like to frame the problem, instead of having, so like a schema just maps to data in the database, right? So if you have a products table, you might have a product schema. If you have a store table, you might have a store schema. And so instead of just having one schema that's shared across the board, what I did was each kind of root level context or concern, which would be like marketplace or control panel for like managing things, or the store admin for managing things. Instead of sharing one base schema for product and store, they would just define their own. And each three of those schemas would map to the same database table. And that works really well until you start having more and more like kind of virtual fields, or more and more like user-specific data. So like a product's price can be a different price for three different users. So depending on the type of user, depending on the store settings, and depending on like a product sale status, a user might see a certain price. So then we have to do a lot of work to, you know, calculate that, and then make sure that anywhere a product is being loaded into the UI, it has that data, like it has those transformations plugged in. And that's kind of where the problem was, because, okay, well, we have like 10 product schemas. We have to go through and, well, you know,
we have 15. I just pulled it up.
15. It's very tedious.
It's excessive. And yeah.
It's like, it works well, because that means like, you don't have a manage, or you don't have like any data leaking anywhere, because the schemas only define the fields that they need. But then it becomes brittle, maybe not the right term, just like hard to maintain is maybe a better way to describe it. It's hard to maintain.
Yeah. And I mean, we haven't obviously worked with kind of what you're refactoring it to be more like. So it's kind of hard to say how that's going to work out. I mean, obviously you ended up having problems with this method, right? But
yeah.
I don't know. I'm really just happy that we have the ability to do that, and then go back and think about like architecturally, is this something that we maybe wish we'd done a little bit differently? And can we actually spend some time on that to do that? And it's like we have this environment where we're able to do that, which I think is really awesome and really important to doing good, to building a good app over a long period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Building and maintaining a good app, I guess.
Yeah, so I mean, we talked about last week how refactoring Phoenix, or especially like how Phoenix encourages you to design applications, makes it pretty easy because everything's just kind of, things are namespaced a certain way, so there's not a lot of collisions. And so literally all I did was I made a data folder inside of DK, and then there's a schemas folder inside of that. So I have a data module, dk.data, and I have some documentation in that. And then each schema, so I think we have like 35 tables in the database right now. So there's 35 schemas in there, and they're all like dk.data.product, dk.data.store. And I'm actually not defining any like change sets or queries or anything in there. It's just like mapping data from the database. And then because of how that's set up, I made a list of all the different places that I want to go through and update this stuff, which is the whole app. But I just made sure that like I made a list so I could go through and check off one by one. And I started with where I thought the least friction would be. And it took me 5 minutes to update the actual code for taxonomies and the tests for taxonomies. And also I created new factories for the taxonomies. So because we had like split schemas, it made doing kind of like the factory girl setup pretty difficult because you just have a crap ton of factories laying around. So what I did was I just made any new factories in the root of the factories folder in the test support folder. And I just prefix them for now with data underscore, so like data underscore product, data underscore store. And so that way, as I'm updating tests, I'm not affecting anything that's currently existing. As I'm updating code, I'm not actually affecting anything that's currently existing or currently functioning. So theoretically, I could deploy this update right now where the taxonomy context is using kind of the unified schemas and it would work fine and nothing else would break.
Theoretically.
I mean, the tests are passing.
Right.
But... You know,
yeah, but
you know.
But it's very easy to do non-destructive refactoring, I think is kind of the crux of that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And so like the big thing to me is like, okay, I didn't want to have God schemas, so to speak. Like to me, it becomes difficult where like I keep using the Rails comparison because that's what I know. And I know there are better ways to do it and there's ways to solve this problem. But like if you don't do any research, you kind of fall into the pitfall where you have like a product model and that product has like all, it's just full of methods and full of varying degrees of state in one file. That's just what I didn't want. But when I'm thinking about these unified schemas, it doesn't actually like unify the writing and the reading into one file. It literally just unifies the namespace that schema or that the data mapper really is set at. So by doing this, we can have all the schemas in one namespace called data, and we can still define custom change sets, basically custom business operations, like writes and reads and stuff. We can define those in each context and not have to have them kind of globally set. If that makes sense. So we still get the benefit of, you know, the marketplace doesn't need to know anything about writing to users. It just needs to know that users exist and a user owns a store or can own more than one store. That's all it needs to know. It doesn't need to leak information like how do I list all the users or varying states of users. It just needs to know that there's a table that has this foreign key on it. And you can use that to preload a user's stores, for example. And so, go ahead.
I think one of the important things about what we're doing here, at least to my mind, is or one of the important distinctions from these Bean models is what you said about there not being methods. Like I think these data things should, and I believe this is what you're going for, that they should just be the definition of like what's in the table, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And not it shouldn't be stuff to access them or anything like that. It's just like here's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's kind of all it does. And then, I mean, honestly, we could even have the freedom. I don't know if this would work out or not, but we could even have the freedom to just if we did want to have entirely separate schemas, we could still create those in under data, like multiple ones accessing a single table. I mean,
yeah, you could. You certainly could, yeah.
There's nothing stopping us from doing that if that's something we wanted to do.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. So it's difficult, again, unless you're familiar with working with Ecto and Elixir. But for example, let's say you have marketplace.browse and marketplace.manage. In both of those have a product schema. So like marketplace browse product and marketplace manage product. So let's say you had a function that operates on products. So if you wanted to go up a level and have a function that operates on products, say in just marketplaces, then you can no longer pattern match on the type of struct that's being given to that function. So if you just had one schema, you could say function, define function, list products for store. List products for store. And so you might want to say like, okay, well, we need to make sure that we get an actual store struct passed here. And so if you have multiple definitions of a store, and in that marketplace module, you alias that module as like a marketplace browse store, but someone somewhere in the application passes that function, a marketplace manage store, then it won't match because technically they're different structs. And that may be like a poor way of explaining it, but
and that can be good. I think it's important to say that. That could be a good thing. That could be what you actually want.
Yes.
But in many cases, at least for what we're doing right now, that's not what we want. And missing out on that pattern matching ability is kind of a bummer.
It's kind of a bummer. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's like a lot of things that you kind of lose out on there. But basically, you just have to write so much more code. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, it makes it more difficult for two people to maintain. And I think that you're right. I think that there should be a place. I think that I was trying to recoil so far the other way from God schemas that I was trying to split them up too small. And I think that you're right. I think that there should be a place that's kind of like the source of truth, because this folder is really just a representation of the tables in the field, in the columns, in the tables and database. And then any additional like virtual attributes that can be accessed on that table. And I think like where we're making the right decision here is that we have that list, and that way we can pattern match like a product is a product, right? So there's not like an engagement product, there's not a store product, there's not like a sale product. A product is a product because it's data.product, right? But then anywhere you need to access or work on that data, the parent context, whether it's marketplace, whether it's control panel, that's where the validation rules and the access control, you know, like the policies, like checking permissions and stuff, that's where that should happen. And that's kind of what we're working, or we will be working with, what I'm working on now. And so far it feels really nice. Like I'm seeing lots of code getting thrown away. I'm seeing lots of duplicate code getting thrown away. And I'm seeing our testing set up. The tests are going to be a lot easier to write because now there's more of a standardized way to do factories or to kind of like have fixture data. And you don't have varying states of fixture data happening. It's all just kind of like coming from one place.
Right. I mean, a lot of the tests we were doing previously, at least for what I was doing, I was just like stubbing out little quickie methods inside my test files to generate structs of things I needed.
Yeah.
I mean, that was okay. It wasn't the worst, but I think having something standardized will be nice.
Yeah. And it just becomes more difficult, especially like we keep saying, like things are growing and that require like, okay, so adding a column, it's not a trivial thing, but now it's like, it takes a lot longer and it's a lot easier to miss something.
Yeah. And if you miss something, you can introduce these really, we've had a couple of these like weird subtle bugs.
Yeah, where you kind of like, you have so many more users than you that are using the site. So it's like, unless you literally have 100% code coverage on everything and your tests are written correctly, you're just not going to catch it. I don't know, because there's still a lot of things about that setup that I like in theory. I think the big thing is in theory versus in practice or in actual usage is where I'm learning. And it was interesting because when we first started talking about doing this, and you're talking about how it is kind of a pain to be able to move and change stuff or add things without having to like lush through the whole code base. At first I was kind of like, oh, that's a bummer, you know, cause it seems like, a mistake, but now in my, like that decision, you know, when I made the decision, but now I'm kind of happy because that's experience that we have where we wouldn't have had that experience before in terms of like building and architecting an application. And that's the kind of experience that I've been wanting to get for a long time, you know, cause I've been talking to people and I think I made a Spectrum group too called, architecture design. I can't remember exactly what it was called, but that's the kind of stuff that I wanted to talk to people about was things like this, that you could only learn by being in that situation.
Right. If we had just decided to go this route from the beginning, then we wouldn't have anything to compare it to.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's ever, obviously there are bad architecture decisions. That's not a good way to put it, but
sure.
I don't think trying things and then deciding that they're not a great idea is inherently bad. I think it can be very healthy and very good.
Yeah.
It's strong opinions, loosely held sort of thing.
Yeah. And I think the silver lining here is that, I mean, the app is still running. It's still working. There's not any bugs happening. And we're not blocked by anything. Like if we needed to add a new feature tomorrow, we could, you know, it's not like, okay, well, we have to stop everything and redo this whole thing. It's more of like we're kind of like folding this in as we keep working on the application. These changes are getting folded in, which
we have a bad piece of the app, but we can create the new good piece of the app to replace it and then remove that separately. It's just like puzzle pieces.
Yeah.
That we get to, it's just so modular. I love it.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. That's what feels good. That's a good way to put it. It
feels
just so
great
modular
to work with.
You can, the fact that you can just go through and like replace the lowest traffic parts of your application without affecting anything else, like you know that it doesn't affect anything else, is just very nice. Which is part of the reason why I jumped on it so quickly, you know, because we are going to be working on some big things coming up, and I wanted to get this done. But it's cool that I don't have to like, all right, we have to stop everything while this happens. You know, that's to me was the coolest part.
Yeah, definitely. It's that iterative progress, you know. You have to always be making little changes, little improvements, always leave things better than you found them.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's big projects like this where you're touching a lot of stuff in the code base, but sometimes it's just going into an old file that you have to touch anyway and making sure it's tidied up and formatted properly and has decent comments if it needs them.
Yeah, I guess a good way to put this would be to say that imagine the schemas are post-it notes, and right now I have post-it notes in different drawers and different desks, and I'm taking all the post-it notes and putting them in the same drawer in the same desk. So now if you want to know where that post-it note comes from or like where that data comes from, it's just in the same drawer. That doesn't mean that like we're only using one pen to write on the post-it notes. It just means the post-it notes are in the same place.
I was wondering where you were going with that analogy. You got it though. Nice.
Yeah. So yeah, Nux. I haven't looked at it yet. I cloned it.
Don't look at it until Monday. Don't look at it until tomorrow. I want it to be a surprise.
Until tomorrow.
Because I want to see how far I can get.
Yeah.
I've got pretty far so far. So the way I decided to approach it, it's kind of daunting. As I know you are all too familiar with.
Yep.
To be like, I have to redo this entire piece of this app.
Oh yeah,
And it's like we've both had to do this several times. I mean, for years now, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's always hard. It's never easy to figure out where to start. So I was just like, I'm gonna start with index.html. I'm just literally gonna start with the homepage, which basically requires implementing a pretty good chunk of everything.
Right.
I mean, that means you have to get the styles pulled over. So I have all the styles pulled over.
Oh.
It means you have to get obviously Nuxt all set up and boilerplated and all everything compiling correctly, and it makes sure it's compiling the SCSS that we have in the app and, you know, all that stuff that you just got to do when you're setting up a new app. You got to get user authentication working. You got to get all your components set up and talking to each other and pulled over from the existing app. You got to get the fonts moved over and images, and it's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's the index page. It's most of the stuff on the site.
Right.
But it's been going pretty well, man. It's like I might be able to finish. I might be able to finish it.
The homepage. We'll
and like auth and stuff.
Okay. Yeah, that makes. Yeah, my first thought was like when you said finish it. My first thought was like what? And
that's not magical.
I understand what you mean. yeah, that's funny. It's just I don't know. It's because anytime you say that, like, oh, we were building into a spa. There's people throwing shade like, oh, that seems like a waste. Why would you need to do that? There's stimulus.js. You don't need to do that.
I don't even know what stimulus.js is.
It's
I probably should.
It's a new framework. Well, I don't even know what to call it, a framework. I don't want to. Hashtag React isn't a framework. Twitter shaming trend that was a couple years ago. Anyway, it's a tool from Basecamp, and it really works well with their philosophy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It hooks into it. It's like Turbo Links friendly and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. No. So yeah. So basically, it's like MVC, but in the JS, but not Backbone.
Right.
And it works off of data attributes. So you tell like data dash controller and stuff, and so that like maps to a controller that you write in the JavaScript to handle whatever. So basically, that would be like your controller would be where you put, like, for example, your methods and stuff in a view component, for example. That's roughly what it is. It's made for like sprinkling into mostly HTML rendered pages or mostly like server rendered pages.
Do people throw shade when you say you're going to build a spa though these days? Is that still a thing?
I see people. Yeah.
I should go on Twitter more, or maybe I should stay off Twitter.
Maybe you should, yeah.
Maybe stay off Twitter entirely. One of the two.
It's just little dumb things. I don't know. It's just people are like, oh, that's a waste of money. Like a lot of times I see people kind of like from the old guard are like, oh, that's a waste of money. Or like, here's this package that makes it so you don't have to do that. I'm like, well, friend, we're doing that now.
Yeah, I'm just faster in this workflow. Like literally that's it for me. It's just easier and faster for me to build more complex stuff.
I truly think that you
when I'm building on a pure API and a pure client consuming that API, I just do better work straight up. That's it for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you get a better product because it, you know, it's so like how Vue is currently used on Design Collective where we're using inline templates and stuff. It works, but to get any of, I don't know. I don't want to call them like cooler hip features because they're not really that. It's kind of like expected now. You people expect these things. And some of our business goals, you know, to like satisfy some of our business goals, it's just getting more difficult to, most new things are happening via JS. And so suddenly you have so much more JavaScript than you do HTML components. You basically just have, your router is just the server instead of view router at that point, you know?
Yeah. And I've been pretty impressed with how not painful it's been to work with Vue in the way that it's set up, kind of embedded, like half and half embedded into Elixir and half using the API.
Yeah.
Like it's actually been not bad at all. But that's not, like, it's not a question of whether it's painful. I'm just able to move faster and do better work. That really is it for me. Like, that's what I like about the spa workflow. And there's a ton of other things I like, but that's like the thing that closes the deal for me, that makes it the way I want to work.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like, coming from the CTO perspective, the thing that seals the deal for me is being able to render all that JavaScript on the server the first time, on the first load for first time users. Or for users that land on the site the first time. To me, that makes so much more sense because like right now, you land on the page and you get part of a page until the data comes through and the JavaScript is parsed and then the API requests come back. And luckily, Phoenix is super fast. So, you know, you get an HTML template back in 20 milliseconds and you get an API response back in 20 milliseconds, you know. So it's fast in the grand scheme of things. But there's still that flash, you know, that flash of like, here's where JavaScript will be. Or, you know, things rendered by JavaScript will be. And I don't know, it just kills me a little bit every time I see it. So from my perspective, it's like, okay, Nuxt is a great tool. I've used it in production on large sites. And it, in terms of Design Collective, it'll make the front end faster. I think that it'll make the content more accessible. It'll make it easier for us to iterate on design changes and things. It'll just be a better product overall, I think.
But there was something I was going to say, damn it. Oh, it was so poignant. Do we just want to call it? I think we just call it.
Yeah, you can call it.
We're 35 minutes. All right. Thanks again to Datadog for supporting Does Not Compute. Aggregating and acting on the fire hose of data from the systems in your stack can be a nightmare, but Datadog makes it easy. They connect to over 200 popular services and applications out of the box and can be easily extended with custom integrations. Once you've got your metrics in Datadog, they've got a full suite of tools to help you visualize and act on them, including anomaly detection, alert forecasting, and end-to-end request tracking. Check out datadog.com/doesnotcompute to start your free trial, and you'll get a free Datadog t-shirt when you make your first dashboard.